For War News Radio at Swarthmore College, I'm Amber Sheff.
And I'm Christine Kim. Nearly 140,000 Syrian Kurds have fled to Turkey as ISIS extends its reach into the Kobani region of northern Syria. Following the takeover of some 105 villages, 8 airlifts carrying aid for up to 200,000 Kobani refugees has arrived at Adana Airport in Turkey. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees anticipates that Kobani's population, some 400,000 people, will cross the border into Turkey. Many of Kobani's current inhabitants are Syrians who have already been displaced from cities such as Aleppo and Homs. UNHCR Chief Spokeswoman Melissa Fleming has noted that the number of refugees arrived in Turkey matches the number that have sought refuge in Europe during the past 3 years of conflict.
President Barack Obama called for a strong global response to ISIS in a UN address this Wednesday, saying, quote, "The only language understood by killers like this is the language of force." This speech came shortly after the U.S. began airstrikes targeting ISIS agents in Iraq and Syria. ISIS has shown no signs of ceasing their assaults. This week, ISIS militants beheaded a French citizen in Algeria and attacked Iraqi military forces in the cities of Baghdad, Saqlawiya, and Bukaba. While it remains unclear how many countries will join the U.S. in fighting ISIS, the Netherlands announced it will send aircraft and personnel to support efforts to stop the advance of ISIS.
A warplane fired multiple shots on a port in Benghazi this past Wednesday. Forces loyal to former Libyan general Khalifa Haftar claimed to be behind the airstrike. Sakara al-Jarushi, head of Haftar's air defense unit, said about the airstrike, quote, "We are in a state of war, and Ansar al-Sharia and its allies are using the port to ship in arms against our troops." The plane purposely missed hitting the quay, but Jarushi warns that next time the plane will attack any ship that attempts to offload weapons. These airstrikes raise concern about ability to supply food and consumer goods, as this port is crucial for wheat and fuel importation. Attacks were also made Wednesday on areas near Tripoli, including Yarmouk Base and a militia transport pound in Salah Adin. These strikes targeted areas controlled by Libya Dawn, a militant Islamist organization. Some think that the planes were launched by the UAE Air Force, but they have not yet claimed official responsibility for the attack. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called upon all opposing parties in the country to make steps towards resolving these conflicts and ensuring that Libya's democratic transition continues.
Approximately 260 Boko Haram militants surrendered in northeastern Nigeria last Tuesday. This capitulation occurred after rumors arose that Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau had died of gunshot wounds sustained in June. The Nigerian military says that in reality, Abubakar Shekau died in 2009, and the recent death was his suspected imposter, Mohamed Bashir. Either way, the surrender is important, coming after several weeks of victories for the Nigerian military against Boko Haram militants. With a civilian death count surpassing 2,000, this year has been one of the bloodiest in the long-standing conflict between Boko Haram and the Nigerian government.
On June 30, 2014, Mexican Army forces reported the injury of one policeman and the deaths of 22 gang members in what was described as a fierce gun battle in the town of Tlatlaya. Though the soldiers were initially praised for their continuing protection of citizens, now nearly 3 months later, civilians and human rights activists are questioning the validity of the report's version of events. The lopsided death toll and lack of gun casings alone both indicate a one-sided occurrence. Blood-splattered walls look more like the result of an execution rather than a battle, investigators say. Witness accounts further buttress the doubts. One witness has claimed that her 15-year-old daughter was wounded by a soldier during the shootout and then finished off by soldiers when they shot her in the chest as she lay in pain. The same witness reported that the 22 dead were rounded up and cornered in a warehouse where they were shot to death. In response to the doubts voiced by the human rights watchdogs and the media, the Mexican government has announced that the Federal Attorney General's office would investigate the killings.
NATO says Russian forces in eastern Ukraine have started to withdraw, but many troops remain in the area. The departure follows a recent peace agreement between the two sides, which creates a 30-kilometer buffer zone. This marks the latest such deal since a previous ceasefire set at the beginning of this month failed. While Moscow continues to deny the allegations of arming rebels in Ukraine, the presence of Russian troops in the regions of Donetsk and Luhansk has prompted both the United States and the European Union to impose sanctions on Russia. In March, Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean region, provoking hostilities. UN officials report over 3,000 deaths in the conflict since April.
Uyghur activist Ilham Tohti was sentenced to life imprisonment for separatism on Tuesday. Tohti, who is also an economics professor, is a well-known advocate for the Uyghur minority, a Turkic ethnic group who lived primarily in China. He has criticized many of the Chinese government's policies relating to the Uyghurs. Tohti denies the charge of advocating for the independence of China's Xinjiang region, saying that he has always sought dialogue, not conflict, with the Han-majority ethnic group. Muslim Uyghurs often face repression, unequal treatment, and tensions between the two groups have often flared into violence. Tohti's sentence has received widespread condemnation from foreign governments and human rights activists. Tohti's lawyer says that he will appeal, however, a reduced sentence is very unlikely.
The United Nations Climate Change Summit began this week as world leaders met with UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to discuss major environmental policy changes. These talks are part of an effort to mobilize nations in advance of the official UN Framework Convention on Climate Change talks that will take place in Paris at the end of next year. Opening this week's summit, Ban Ki-moon admonished powerful nations for being slow to take action against climate change, insisting that meaningful, universal agreement would be necessary. United States President Barack Obama echoed many of the same sentiments, but directed most of his remarks at China, challenging them to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. While President Obama reminded the UN General Assembly that developed and developing nations alike need to take action, he maintained that the US and China, as the world's largest economies and polluters, need to take responsibility together.
If you want to hear more from War News Radio, visit us online at warnewsradio.org. This week's newscast was written and edited by Rachel Diamond, Amy DiPiero, Jay Clayton, Leo Elliott, Amelia Erskine, Allison Raybar, Gloria Kim, Sabrina Merrill, Sarah Morrell, Dylan Okabi-Jawdit, Jerry Chin, Rachel Sasella, Lily Tyson, Tyler Welsh, and Rachel Yang. I'm Christine Kim.
And I'm Amber Sheff. Until next time, thanks for listening.